This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
And hi, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. It is another beautiful, beautiful Sunday out there. I think last Sunday we had a little frost and some snow on the ground. Today we have, you know, rain on the ground that will eventually turn into snow and frost. Thank you so much for tuning in. Today we're going to be talking about sleep and sleep disorders with our guest, Dr. Chris Winter, who is the medical director of the Martha Jefferson Hospital Sleep Medicine Center. Dr. Winter, how do you ever get that all on the same resume?
Doc, so I usually don't have to worry too much about it. I try to avoid resumes when possible.
Well, I didn't get any of that. Sean, come over here and tell me that one more time.
I was saying I usually am referred to by the title sleep doc when I go places, so I usually try to avoid the multiple word title if possible.
Sleep doc. I'll have to remember that for the rest of the hour because I'm going to stumble over that for a lot if I try and say Dr. Chris Winter, medical director of the Martha Jefferson Hospital Sleep Medicine Center. Or
it's a good it's a good title, but Chris will do too.
Chris, our sleep doc, and that's what we'll be talking about today is sleep. Chris, let's jump right into things. Your background. Let's tell everyone how well trained and learned you are.
My background was somewhat accidental and owes a lot to Paul Surratt, who is actually the medical director of the Sleep Center at the University of Virginia. I started working with him when I was an undergraduate doing research on sleep that involved Yucatan micropigs, trying to figure out things about sleep apnea, the dynamics of upper airway resistance, and I was lucky to get a date when I was in college here at UVA because I always smelled like pork. But that's the humble beginnings and got interested in sleep. He was a fantastic mentor. And from there went to medical school down in Emory where I hooked up with some doctors at their sleep center, Don Blywise and David Rye, and worked with them the 4 years I was down at Emory. Came back to Charlottesville to do my neurology residency. And then down to Chapel Hill with Brad Vaughn, who runs the sleep center at the University of North Carolina, and then came back to Martha Jefferson to get their sleep center off the ground.
What year did you graduate from UVA?
I graduated from UVA in 1995.
Oh, okay. I was going to say I didn't recognize you from my time there, but then again, I didn't hang around people who smelled like pork.
That's right.
So that might have been part of the issue. All right. Again, 979-0919. Write that down for later in the program. We will be talking about sleep and sleep disorders with Dr. Chris Winter from Martha Jefferson. The first and most important question, maybe not of the hour, but certainly for many of the adults listening today, how do you help kids fall asleep on Christmas Eve?
You know, that's a great question, and it's often an example I use when I talk to patients about insomnia. Insomnia is generally the meeting of sleepiness and anxiety. It's where these things sort of come together and collide in a negative way. I'm not sure the best way to do that. Probably the best way is for the nights leading up to Christmas, have your kids stay up a little bit later than they typically would, and probably a meal heavy on carbohydrates on Christmas Eve night might help. It's sort of the same theory of Thanksgiving dinners making people feel a little bit sleepy. I'm not really sure. I think that the key is just having them a little bit more sleep-deprived than normal, and then after that, they're just going to have to do it on their own. It was always a hard night for me, I remember.
All right, it is 11:04 here on the wake-up call, and a special shout-out to those on Harrisonburg's 95.1. We know you need your sleep, too. And a thanks to Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can help keep our planet green for years to come. And when Dixon's picks up the trash, they sort it and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business. Phone number 978-2111. Online, it's DixonDisposal.com. All right, Dr. Winter. I want to know, what is a good night's sleep? I mean, I sort of jokingly ask about the kids falling asleep on Christmas Eve, but what qualifies as a good night's sleep? It can't just be, you know, crawling in bed at 1 hour and waking up at another.
You're exactly right. You have to be very careful about the way you define a good night of sleep. I think a lot of magazines and popular media get that wrong. I think that I would define a good night's sleep as a period of time that's relatively consistent, where you're getting in bed at a certain time, you're falling asleep in a relatively short period of time, generally around 15 minutes is would be considered average. Once you fall asleep, you sleep well through the night, and you're waking up at some time 6 to 9 hours later, and you feel like the sleep was positive, and you feel refreshed the next day. If you're meeting that criteria, I would say that that's a good night of sleep. So if you're saying, Chris, I go to bed at midnight, I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I sleep great at night, and I have all the energy in the world during the day, perhaps that's a good night's sleep for you. It probably wouldn't be for many people, but it may be for you. So you have to be careful not to assign a certain number of hours to a good night's sleep, because it can vary from person to person.
All right. So, but for some people, I mean, give me the bell curve.
Sure.
That your example there was 5 hours, and it seemed to me as though you were setting that up, that that's not quite the major percentage, but it can be done for some. So what is the bell curve?
There's a famous doctor who has a fantastic quotation, I won't take credit for it, that said the number of people that can sleep at night and get 5 hours of sleep or less per night and feel their best, rounded to a whole number, is zero. So they're out there. It's a very small percentage, and you're very perceptive. There is a bell curve distribution, and I would say probably somewhere in the middle for an adult would be about 8 hours. That would be average. Are there people who need more than 8 hours? Yes. Are there people who need less? Absolutely. And it's important to understand how much sleep you need as an individual, so you can understand how best to set up your schedule and sleep your best. That bell curve will change over time. I mean, children can need, as you know, a newborn can need as much as 12 to 18 hours of sleep. And as we get older, we tend to require less sleep. And that really continues even into our golden years. We continue to need less sleep as we get older. So it's important to not only understand how much sleep you need, but how much sleep you need at a certain point of time. I have patients who come to my office all the time and say, well, I've always gotten up at this time and gone to bed at this time. And that's when they were 20. Now they're 68 years old. Things may have changed. And that might be the reason why they've come to see me.
We are talking about sleep, and we will be talking about sleep disorders. Our guest today, Dr. Chris Winter, a specialist in this category of sleep and sleep disorders. People discuss food and drink and sleep as the three things that are needed.
Absolutely.
So we spend a third of our life sleeping.
And the rest eating.
Well, I have a little more percentage of that than you probably. But there are good and bad things. We know that there are good and bad things we can eat. We know that there are good and bad things you can drink. But there must be good and bad things you can do to sleep. I mean, and we know
absolutely.
We know the basics. You know that you don't, you know, I know that you're not supposed to have a television in your room because the bed is supposed to be the place that you sleep.
Yep.
It is better to sleep if it has a set things that you do there, and if you watch television there, then it kind of loses its speciality. But there must be bad things that come from a good night's sleep too, aren't there?
Bad things that come from a good night of sleep.
Well, there are, a good meal can still provide bad things, correct?
Sure. No, I think the one way you could look at what you're saying is that, take for instance an individual who may have sleep apnea. Now, sleep apnea is a condition. It's very simple. Your upper airway collapses when you sleep at night, making it difficult to breathe, so your brain has to wake up to catch its breath. Most patients, or I would say many patients who have sleep apnea, when you ask them about the quality of their sleep. Now, you're not asking their spouse, you're asking the patient. They'll often say that they're excellent sleepers, that they can sit anywhere and fall asleep at the drop of a hat and sleep well through the night. Now, do they feel rested and refreshed the next day? Often they don't, but they will perceive that as being a good night of sleep. So I would say that that in certain situations like that, a good night of sleep, what you perceive as being such, may not actually be a good night of sleep. But I don't know of too many things that come from too many bad things that come from a good night of sleep. If all the check marks are checked off.
How about bad things that come from bad night of sleep that apply to eating and drinking? I mean, because it seems like, you know, and I know that there's food, shelter, and clothing. I'm not talking about shelter and clothing and dismissing them. But if you have a bad night of sleep, how does that play into the diet?
Sure, sure. These are great questions, and they really work
hard.
Both ways. What's that?
I worked hard.
These are great. It really, diet and sleep really work both ways, and it's really quite fascinating. When you think about going forward, we mentioned Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving often comes about the sleepiness where you have a very big meal full of carbohydrates that get converted into a chemical called serotonin in our brain that can eventually get to tryptophan, and some of the insulin changes that go along with that meal can induce a lot of sleepiness. So there are certain things that we can eat or drink that influence our sleep. Alcohol is one that I deal with quite a bit. Alcohol is one of the most commonly used sleep aids in this country, and it's really quite miserable for your sleep. It tends to suppress dreaming. It tends to increase fragmentation of your sleep during the second half of the night. It's not a really positive thing for your sleep. So caffeine can really work the same way for a lot of people. If they're drinking a lot of caffeine later in the night, it can be disruptive to their sleep. So clearly there are things that we can eat or drink that will influence our sleep in negative ways. But it also works the opposite. If an individual is chronically not sleeping well or not getting enough sleep, changes start to happen in our body where certain chemicals are trying to influence our behaviors. There's a chemical called leptin that gets suppressed when we are chronically sleepy, and leptin, one of its jobs is to make us feel satisfied or full. So you can imagine if somebody's not sleeping well or really burning the midnight oil, they're suppressing leptin, it's going to make them want to eat more. And what the brain's trying to do, in a sense, is trying to eat itself awake. I mean, there's a lot of individuals who, when they sit down in a boring meeting or for a long car ride, they're eating and drinking things not because they're hungry, but because their brain is trying to keep themselves awake. And obviously, that doesn't help people who are trying to lose weight. There's another chemical called ghrelin that actually gets enhanced when we're not sleeping, and that chemical makes us crave all the stuff we would find at a gas station convenience store. Simple sugars, fats, quick energy. So basically the brain is doing things on a chemical basis that are making us feel more hungry than we should and making us crave things that we shouldn't eat on an attempt to make us stay awake. So I think that there's lots of things, ways that our body and sleep and eating sort of work back and forth together. And they can be a negative or they can be a positive.
Which comes first, the poor sleep or the physical illness problems?
I would say that would be an impossible question to answer, because I think you could actually make arguments for both ways. There are clearly people who, after chronic periods of not sleeping well, will start to physically feel poorly. And I can certainly put myself in that category. When I was a resident at the University of Virginia in the Department of Neurology, we did not sleep much. We were extremely busy. I'm sure the residents who are there right now are sleeping even less than we did. And there have been attempts to sort of limit duty hours and things of that nature. But generally speaking, residency is hard, and it's not a very positive activity based upon sleep, especially if you have a family like I did. So when I slept very poorly and had difficult call nights, I craved certain foods I shouldn't be eating. My body felt achy. I often had headaches. So I think that a lot of individuals who have poor sleep often will start to see changes in terms of the physical feelings of their body. There are a lot of researchers who think that fibromyalgia, which is sort of a chronic type of pain condition that we understand very little about, may be in part due to chronically disrupted sleep. And there have been studies looking at that, particularly in women who have had certain aspects of their sleep disrupted. And after a period of time, they start to complain more about physical ailments and pain. So it definitely goes that way. I think that also when people have medical illnesses, an elderly person's admitted to the hospital for a broken hip, that medical condition is going to adversely affect their sleep. There's no doubt about that. So it definitely goes in both ways.
We are talking with Dr. Chris Winter. He is the medical director of Martha Jefferson Hospital's Sleep Medicine Center. You can call in with your question or comment as we talk about sleep and sleep disorders. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's the toll-free number if you're a little further out and want to use that. And let me take a moment and thank The Backyard for their support today. The university's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue across from the Para Coffee. The Backyard invites you to enjoy outdoor patio seating in their heated tent and to try their winter menu. The Backyard has seasonal brews on tap and is available for private events. For more information, you can find them at The Backyard on Facebook or 434-202-8215. All right, back with our guest today, Dr. Chris Winter. Chris, we had a call a moment ago from someone who wanted to remain anonymous in Afton. He wants to hear about the relationship of vitamin B and sleep.
I don't really know that there is a significant one, or certainly not one that I'm aware of.
Well, to me, if you don't know and someone called in, every time we have this, that means that there's something out there on the fringe of the topic, like Someone somewhere is saying, eat this, take many, many milligrams above the norm for this, or because I have that, it's not the first time where the expert is a little less familiar with the topic.
Yeah.
Are you, anything like that?
I mean, B vitamins are very important for sort of energy manipulation in our body. I'm a big believer that we need to have a balanced, regular diet. Make sure we're eating a good variety of foods. I think all those things influence our sleep in ways that we're aware of and ways that we're not. So I'm absolutely certain, may not know about the relationship between B vitamin sleep, but I'm absolutely certain that all of these things play roles in our ability to sleep our best. Nutrition and proper nutrition is a very positive one, but in terms of high doses of B vitamins and the way they affect sleep, I'll have to do my homework on that.
Well, the Afton caller, please dial back if you have more specific question there, if I interpreted the high dosage part to that or some other version, Dr. Winter here is here for the rest of the hour. It's 1118. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dr. Winter, how has culture changed sleep, either in terms of our efforts, our needs, or our beliefs about sleep?
I think culture has changed our beliefs and the way we sleep tremendously. If you're adding in advents of artificial light and things of that nature, it's a tremendous change. I think that sleep is probably not valued as much now as it was in the past. And certainly I think there's a definite perception that we can do with less now than we used to. Individuals before the advent of light really necessarily needed to go to bed when the sun went down, because with the lack of light, there wasn't a whole lot that could be done. In fact, there's a researcher in Blacksburg who has really put forth this notion that perhaps we were really designed to sleep in two parts at night. And he refers to them as first sleep and second sleep, that individuals used to go to bed as the sun went down, would sleep for a period of time, would actually awaken in the night and be awake for a period of an hour or so, maybe longer, would do work by candlelight, would socialize with other people, and then there was second sleep before the sun came up. So we've definitely moved away from that. We've really, at least in Western culture, we really consolidate our sleep generally in one nighttime block. But I think with our culture being very much more 24-hour, shift workers are a big group of individuals that we deal with. And these individuals are asking their bodies to sort of ignore all of the cues that would typically make them want to go to sleep and work through that period of time and then try to rest their bodies during the day at a time when their brains are saying that they should be awake. So we ask a lot of our bodies in terms of sleep, not only in terms of getting by with less of it, but trying to sleep at very unusual or random times. So I think those are really big reasons why patients come to see sleep doctors now. It's you're often asking the impossible at times for your body. And as we age, this becomes much more difficult. Young people typically do much better with shift work than older people do. So as the population ages and they're in jobs that are asking themselves to sleep on very unusual schedules, an ER nurse perhaps, often you hit a place where the sleep and the wakefulness really kind of collide in a negative way. So I think culture is a tremendous reason why we have the sleep problems we have today.
11:21 on the wake up call. Our guest today, Dr. Chris Winter, he's a sleep doctor here in the Charlottesville area. I've got both phone lines open, I have both phone lines filled. I need to take this quick break, so everyone, hold on just a moment. Let me give you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. It's a rainy day. But in Lynchburg, there's actually a chance of snow showers this afternoon. Highs 40 to 45, warmer in Richmond. Colder in the valley, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and potential snow showers tonight. Lows in the mid-20s. Then tomorrow, mostly cloudy in the morning, becoming partly sunny in the afternoon. A little different wherever you are. Keep an eye out for that. Highs 30 to 35, chilly in the valley, slightly warmer in Richmond. Right now, it's light rain all across the area. 36 in the valley, 35 in Lynchburg, 42 in Richmond, 37 in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's give a shout out thanks to Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, now featuring the Columbia Omni Heat, a waterproof down jacket with 700 fill that provides protection from wet and cold weather. Columbia Omni Heat jackets are available at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, the outdoor store that knows the outdoor. And we also want to tell you about WNRN's bumper decals. They're back, and they're with your frequency or with NRN. You can get yours at the WNRN studios. You can find them at Crutchfield or any of the Markets of Tiger Fuel stores in Charlottesville. More places have them, too. Head over to WNRN.org for a full list of locations around Virginia that carry them. But in your car with a WNRN decal could get you some opportunities to win. And the back will get you a fountain drink at any of the Markets Tiger Fuel. WNRN bumper key decals available now. All right, phone lines. Chris, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, both lines have been waiting, but I believe Jeff from Harrisonburg has been waiting longer. Jeff.
Yes, sir.
All right, question or comment for Dr. Winter?
Yes, I have a question. My late father was overweight, had sleep apnea, had to sleep with a CPAP for about the last 20 years of his life. I'm 43 and I have a mild case of it. Is there anything that I can do, should be doing, to get better sleep and to keep from having to take the next step of sleeping with the machine?
That's a great question. Sleep apnea, in addition to making people feel quite sleepy during the day, has significant effects on health, particularly cardiovascular health. So it's not something that really should be taken lightly. I think the most beneficial thing that you could probably do, knowing nothing about you, would be to lose weight. And often, an individual may have a goal weight in mind in terms of being at their optimal health, but often it doesn't take that much weight loss to significantly affect an individual who has mild sleep apnea. So that's probably the easiest and most healthy thing you can do initially. For some people, and you may be able to get this off of the sleep study that you had, only really have difficulty with their breathing when they're lying on their back. Or in some cases, particularly with children, if they're lying on their sides, if they have big tonsils, they kind of fall together. But a lot of times, positional changes can be helpful. So if you can get yourself not sleeping on your back, and for everybody who just said to themselves in their head, well, I don't really sleep on my back, make sure you check with your bed partner, because a lot of people think they don't sleep on their back and significantly do. So those are the two easiest and most economical things you can do. There are oral appliances that can be made. They look sort of like a retainer, and they can keep your jaw in a certain position so that you don't have the apnea events during the night. People with mild sleep apnea often do quite well with those, and there's some people here in town who do a very good job with those. Finally, there are surgeries that can be done for selective individuals, and again, they're better off. Surgeries are better for patients with mild to moderate sleep apnea. So those are all things that you could do. I do want to address one thing. You mentioned sort of a hesitancy of not wanting to take the next step and wear the CPAP device. What a CPAP device is, for those of you not familiar with it, is a device that you wear either under or over your nose, or perhaps over your nose and mouth, that basically pushes a little bit of air into the back of your airway to keep your airway from collapsing. So it's sort of like an air splint. It's not the same as wearing oxygen. It's not a ventilator per se. And basically, this device, when you wear it, keeps your airway from collapsing and makes you not have sleep apnea. And for bed partners, they're often quite excited because the devices are fairly silent and you can't snore when you wear them. So they're a great treatment sort of secondarily for the snoring that goes along with sleep apnea typically. So I actually just recently wore a CPAP device for a few weeks because I was writing an article about CPAP for a magazine. I thought, well, this would be kind of fun to wear one. So I borrowed one and took it home. And, you know, it's not that bad. The devices look kind of strange, and they have sort of the moniker of being a Darth Vader mask, but they're really quite comfortable. And for people who have sleep apnea, it can make a tremendous world of difference. So what I would do for you, caller, is try some of these simple things first. But if you move towards the CPAP, it's probably not as bad as you think it's going to be. They're actually not too terrible.
I don't know. Hey, Jeff, are you still with me?
Yes, sir.
All right. So, Chris, as someone who has been tested for sleep apnea myself, and sounds like I'm somewhat close to Jeff in this theory about sort of on the edge as to whether or not it was like, well, it would be better, but no, you're not in the realm of those who should or must. You didn't make that sound particularly tasty. You said it's really not that bad.
You have the CPAP?
I do not. And
are
I chose
you talking
not
about the
to
CPAP?
Get I am.
Yeah.
I am talking about the CPAP. Yeah. And I don't know about Jeff, but what I heard was really not that bad, which tells me, yeah, it's really not that comfortable.
Well, I would say the same. I mean, I've worn glasses.
That's the good personality thing.
No. What I would say is this. I've worn glasses since I was in third grade. If somebody had no idea what glasses were and called up on the radio station, I would probably use the exact same phrase. Look, you know, I've worn them. They're not that bad. Now that I'm used to them, I put my glasses on in the morning. I'm really not aware of them until I take a shower at night. But if you'd asked me that question when I was in sixth grade playing baseball and pulling my catcher's helmet off, my glasses would go with them. They were kind of a problem. So if I could choose to wear glasses or not, surprise, surprise, I would choose to have perfect vision and not wear glasses. But having said that, they're not that bad. And so I think that what I'm trying to say is that people come in and really think that if they're going to wear a CPAP at night, it's pretty much the end of the world. And for people who give it an honest try, most of them come back and love it. And I always tell my patients, you don't have to love it to love what it does for you. And I really like being able to see and walk through the office doorway here into the studio and not run into the wall. So it's nice being able to see. I'll wear the glasses. I'll put up with the my kids knocking them off my face when we wrestle around and things of that nature. But I think the CPAP is sort of the same thing. When you wear it, you're going to get to the point where you like it so much what it does for you that putting it on at night's really not that big a deal. I'm not going to say it's a lovely experience, but it's really, I'll stick with my original phrase, it's not that bad. I kind of, you know, and to be perfectly honest with you, I have to say that by the end of my little 3-week experiment, I kind of look forward to putting on at night, and I'm not really sure why. Maybe I've got some latent sleep apnea I'm not aware of.
Jeff, thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
All right, our guest today, Dr. Chris Winter, the sleep doc. He is the medical director of Martha Jefferson Hospital's Sleep Medicine Center. The toll-free line is open with your question, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. We talk about sleep and sleep disorders. And Terry, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
Terry, a man of true patience, waiting and waiting and waiting. Terry from Charlottesville, question or comment?
Questions, plural.
Fire away.
Okay, I'm not formally diagnosed with sleep apnea. I'm sure I know I have it. I snore all the time, loud, always been told. But I've had different developments in the last year. I do a lot of wheezing. A lot of times when I'm going to sleep, either the snoring or the wheezing will wake me back up. And in the last year, I've developed this real dry mouth thing when I wake up in the middle of the night and I've, you know, like my tongue is stuck to the roof of my mouth. That's part of it. Every once in a while, maybe once a week or so, I'll be like halfway asleep and my jaw will snap shut and bite my tongue.
Ouch.
Yeah, it's not pleasant.
Well,
and over the last year, I've developed more of, you know, I'm tired more, especially when I eat. My dreams are more vivid. I almost want to go back to sleep to finish the dreams, and a lot of times I'll wake up more tired than when I went to sleep because of the active, you know, activity in the dream.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot going on here. I'll start with your dreaming. What's interesting about dreaming is that when you're asleep and you're dreaming, and this is not just the caller, but everybody for the most part, when we dream, we're actually paralyzed. So most of the voluntary muscles of our body are not working. So you can imagine that if you have sleep apnea like you think you might, as you start to have your dream, you're going to have more difficulty breathing because the muscles that are valiantly trying to keep your airway open and trying to keep your chest expanded, they're now paralyzed. So often several things will happen at that moment. And we tend to dream 4 or 5 times during the night in a normal situation. So you go to bed, an hour and a half later, you start having your first dream of the night. This paralysis occurs. You're already struggling to breathe anyway because you think you might have sleep apnea. And now you really are having difficulty breathing. So several things will happen. Number one is you're going to start suffocating. You're not going to be aware of it, but subconsciously you may be. And what's interesting is a lot of people who have sleep apnea will say that their dreams are very active. They dream they're being chased. They dream they're drowning or falling or running or doing something physically taxing, because when they wake up from the dream, they often feel like, just like you said, you're out of breath or you've really been working. And what's really happening is, instead of dreaming and then continuing to sleep after your dream, you're dreaming, and because your brain is now faced with the problem of, I'm personifying your brain here, do I continue to sleep or should I breathe? Fortunately, your brain typically chooses choice B, and you breathe. And so now you catch your breath and you wake up and you're aware of the dream that you're having because you just awakened from it, and you get a drink of water, you go back to bed, and the process starts over again. So this kind of dreaming that you're describing is often a hallmark of sleep apnea. So much so, in fact, that for some people, when they are treated for their sleep apnea and now they can dream without suffocating, what happens is they'll sleep, they'll have a dream, and then they'll continue to sleep after the dream, and they won't really remember their dreams as much after the treatment of the sleep apnea as they did before, and that can be distressing to some people, but that's really more the normal state. In terms of your mouth being dry, your jaw snapping open at night, you being aware of this gasping as you're falling asleep, this is all probably a part of the breathing problem and the steps your body's taking to try to keep you breathing. So opening up your mouth, extending your neck, trying to keep your airway open in these ways are probably just byproducts of the fact that you're not breathing the way you should before you go to bed at night. So I think they're probably all related.
So am I going to not wake up one morning?
That the likelihood of that is extremely low, but it does happen. I mean, Reggie White, the famous football player for the Eagles and the Packers, he actually died of sleep apnea. So you have to be careful, particularly for people who have sleep apnea and either don't know it or are vaguely aware of it, who are taking things that are relaxing their muscles at night. So pain medications, narcotics, heavy amounts of alcohol, all those things are going to work against your body being able to maintain its airway and breathe at night. So the combination of those things with sleep apnea can, in rare cases, be very negative. So I think
a nighttime cold and flu capsule is actually the directions say take two, but I only take one. I know that helps me to sleep better, but then I'm so groggy in the morning.
Right. So do you have a cold or the flu?
I'm sorry?
I said, do you have a cold or the flu?
No.
I
have to help open my airways and help knock me out.
Yeah. Well,
I get a longer sleep with less interruption, I feel.
And I think
that's... But I try not to do it a lot, you know.
And at the risk of scaring you and other listeners, you need to be very careful. What most patients with sleep apnea will experience when they come to see me in the office, they're not going to say, look, Dr. Winter, I stopped breathing 100 times an hour. What they're going to say is, I have trouble either, falling asleep or for the most part, staying asleep or getting a good quality of sleep at night. So I'm taking pills to do that. And just remember that the part of this problem that's making your sleep negative, meaning that you're waking up a lot during the night and having trouble sustaining your sleep, is actually what's keeping you breathing at night. So if you're using medications or alcohol or things so you can get a better night of sleep, in quotations, when you have sleep apnea, what you're really telling your brain is, you know what, don't worry so much about catching your breath. So using pills to make a better quality of sleep in an individual who has sleep apnea is really a negative thing. In fact, I work with there was a professional football team I was working with, and we were all sitting around, and I was talking to some of the players about their sleep problems. And one of them said, I've had sleep apnea for 5 years. And I said, wow, that's really interesting. I'm glad you brought that up with me. What do you do to treat your sleep apnea? He said, well, I take a sleeping pill. And I won't mention the name of the sleeping pill, but it's a pretty significant sleeping pill. And so he's not really treating his sleep apnea. What he's doing is he's trying to sedate himself to the point where he's not waking up to catch his breath as much, because that awakening to catch your breath is what he perceives as making the quality of his sleep poor. So you have to be very careful with that. Those kinds of treatments are sort of all over the place. What I would recommend doing is talking to your primary care doctor and saying, look, my sleep is really not going in a great direction, and I think that we need to take another step in terms of what I can do about sleep apnea that I think I have. Be your own advocate. It's okay to tell your primary care doctor, I think that I need to see a sleep doctor, or I think I need something done about my sleep. I think that's a good idea for you to do that.
Thanks, Terry. 979-0919 for you to call up and ask your questions. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. 1138 on WNRN's Sunday Morning Wake Up Call.
This has been your Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management.
And maybe I should give you the right information. As we discussed here before, a proposed ad campaign and the new city ordinance regarding panhandling are creating a controversy downtown. The Hook looks at the real story with the homeless on the mall. Charlottesville hires from within. Maurice Jones moves up to city manager. And the Salvation Army struggles with a tough economy. On newsstands now, The Hook, convenient locations and pretty boxes. Blue Ridge Graphics is supporting us today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296 9746 and at brgtshirts.com. And Drew Thompson will be here at noon for Les Temps Perdue, the best 80s and 90s alternative music, The Replacements, Dead Kennedys, and World Party, brought to you in part by Orzo and the Visual Light Theater. Requests are always welcome on Les Temps Perdue. All right, back in action with our guest today, Dr. Chris Winter, as we talk about sleep and sleep disorders. Chris, we have several questions that came in from people who wish to remain anonymous. I have a caller here who wanted to have you talk about sleep hygiene. Anonymous from Lynchburg.
Great. It's a good question. Sleep hygiene refers to things that you can do particularly with your environment that make your sleep more positive. And you touched on one earlier about having a television in your room. And I think that it's important to understand that sleep hygiene is really most important for people who are struggling with their sleep. If you're listening and think, I sleep great, I have a fantastic sort of routine, I feel energetic when I wake up during the day, they may or may not be as important to you. But television in the room is probably one of the biggest offenders. Individuals who are sort of lulled to sleep by their television and often will fall asleep with it on. I have patients who come in quite frequently and say they have the television on all night, which is probably not a very positive thing for your sleep. What you really want to do is create an environment where you sleep, where it's very comfortable, the temperature is good, your bedding is of good quality and comfortable. There are people here in town that do an excellent job with getting mattresses and bedding products to you that are specific to your needs and your health, which I think are very important to explore. You want to make sure your room is extremely dark. Light has a way of stimulating our brain and making us want to be more awake. So you want lots of light where you work during the day. And then conversely, when you sleep at night, you want your room to be quite dark. Avoiding caffeine, alcohol, the things that we talked about early in the program. I always make a joke with my patients. You can have all the wonderful Virginia wine that you'd like. Just have it with breakfast, not with dinner. That's a joke, obviously, but it's important.
Not really, for all of us.
That's right. You want to separate out alcohol from either being a sleep aid or something that's interfering with your sleep. I think sleeping pills can be quite negative, and I really would sort of cluster those in there with sleep hygiene. I'm a writer, or I'm actually one of the medical experts for Men's Health Magazine. I'm their sleep doctor, and we did an article back in September about the weird and dangerous world of sleeping pills, which is a really great study of some of the negative things that go along with taking sleeping pills chronically when you sleep at night. So I think avoiding those things. There is a place for sleeping pills, but it should not be something that you rely on to sleep every night for the most part. So those are the most important things. You know, relaxing during the night. You don't want to be doing stressful things before you go to bed at night. For the athletes that I work with, particularly some of the high school students that we work with, one of the things I tell them is that they really shouldn't be on computers or texting people right before they go to bed at night. That's often somewhat stressful for some people. And the light that's shining right in your eyes is, again, another stimulus for you to be awake. So I'm going to tell all my Covenant High School boys basketball team players that if they're listening, they better not be texting or listening to this podcast tonight, late at night, that it should be something they're doing during the day because I want them to get their sleep. So that's probably the most important thing in terms of sleep hygiene, I would think.
11:43 on the wake-up call, talking about sleep and sleep disorders with Dr. Chris Winter, medical director of Martha Jefferson Hospital's Sleep Medicine Center. And we got another call. Michelle in Richmond. Hey, Michelle.
Hey, Merry Christmas to you both there.
Thank you very much. Question or comment for Dr. Winter?
Hi, Dr. Winter. Two questions, please.
Sure.
I've loved milk all my life, and I'm middle-aged now, and I never have slept well, and milk never used to make me sleepy. Then in an attempt to help me sleep, I used warm milk, and now even a cold milkshake in the middle of the day, I have to avoid it because it makes me sleepy. So why does that tryptophan affect me more and more as I get older? Also, I have some sinus congestion, and I wondered if you would, if it would be any good to raise the head of my bed a couple of inches to help with the sinus in the morning.
Yeah, I'll start with your sinus. These are great questions. Number one, raising your head of the bed can certainly help with sinus and sinus drainage for some people. If you wanted to go that route, certainly there are the great inhaled steroids that could be helpful for you too. But raising the head of the bed is probably going to help you in two ways. Number one is it may help with your sinuses, and that can be very problematic for people who are having difficulty sleeping because they can't breathe through their nose. But the second thing is that sitting upright tends to put your airway in a little bit more of a favorable position in terms of not collapsing. So while it doesn't sound like you have significant sleep apnea, if you did have a little bit of tendency in terms of having some breathing disturbances as you get older, as individuals get older, particularly women after menopause, they're more likely to have sleep apnea, and I think women tend to hide it a little bit better than men, but sleeping upright can make it more favorable for your breathing at night. I have a lot of individuals who sort of almost self-diagnose themselves. They come into my office and say, you know what, it started several years ago, but I would sit there and watch the football game at night, and I would fall asleep in my lazy boy, and when I woke up the next morning, you know, I feel like I felt better sleeping in my lazy boy than I did when I actually got up and went to bed, and that's usually because sitting upright can make that better. So I think those are that's a very favorable thing for you to do. In terms of milk, I'm glad you brought that up. Again, with sleep hygiene, one thing that can be very positive for people is to take a really hot bath or a really hot shower about 30 minutes before they go to bed. If you're sitting in that bathtub, your body temperature raises a few degrees when it's really nice and hot. Then you hop out and dry off and put your flannel pajamas on. And when you're out of the bathtub and getting ready for bed, that cooling process, so now your core temperature drops a few degrees, that sort of is a natural trigger. It kind of fools your body into thinking your cortisol is dropping, and that's the reason why, you know, men and women tend to fight over the thermostat at night, because often our cortisol drops at different times, and with our cortisol goes our body temperature. So a lot of times if you're doing that, you can make yourself feel a bit more sleepy by taking that hot bath or hot shower before you go to bed at night. In fact, many years ago, my son Tice actually wrecked on his skateboard and skinned up his knee, and so I was actually getting into a bathtub with him earlier in the evening and helping him try to clean his knees off, because we really couldn't do it in the shower. And I found that whole week I was really sleepy early in the evening, and it wasn't until several months later that I figured out, it's because I was getting in this hot bath with my son. But anyway, the milkshake is probably working the same way. When you warm milk in the evening, a lot of times that's kind of heating up your internal temperature, and as it cools, that may be one of the reasons why it's making you sleepy. I think the milkshake making you sleepy now, again, is probably more of a function of the high carbohydrate load that you're taking earlier in the day, kind of getting converted to neurotransmitters that are going to make you feel more sleepy. Why it's affecting you now more now than it did earlier on, I'm not really sure, but one thing you consider is, are you sleepier now than you used to be when you were younger? So are there other things that are at play here besides the milkshake?
Michelle, thank you so much. Good questions.
Thanks. Merry Christmas again.
And Merry Christmas to you. And Michelle reminds me that next Sunday is the last Sunday before Christmas. So, as often happens, Santa will be here visiting the wake-up call. If you have a young child who would like a phone call from Santa, you can email me, abstractme@AOL.com. Santa always needs the name, the age, a phone number that will be reachable from about 11:30 until noon, and a gift so that we can help Santa make sure that we put the right person with the right gift. 979-0919. I see that line ringing now. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Dr. Winter, I have three questions here that seem to be all related to sleep and clocks. So I'm just going to go 1, 2, 3.
Wonderful.
Anonymous from Charlottesville. Talk about resetting your clock and if there are any recommended prescriptions.
Sure. So what we're talking about now is something that's very dear to me. what we're talking about is sort of an individual's sleep as it relates to time. And this gets very important when you're talking about things like jet lag and daylight savings time. And some of the research we do with athletes really looks at this, because we can all sort of divide ourselves into morning types or evening types. And generally speaking, if you're a night owl or an evening type, you probably do better in adjusting your body clock than if you're a morning person. Similarly, as we get older, we have a little bit more trouble adjusting our clocks than when we're younger. So it depends on what this caller is really talking about. If he's saying, look, I travel to Hong Kong a couple times a month and I have trouble adjusting my clock to the time there, there are certain medications that you can take. There are certain ways that you can sort of pre-plan your sleep before you leave, and that's not only adjusting your sleep but also your meals. And then there are also medications that you can take once you arrive in a certain time zone that will make you feel more awake for that time, and you take that for a few days and you can get yourself much more quickly acclimated. For people who travel a lot, one of the newer things that has been looked at is actually fasting. So getting up in the morning on the day of your flight, skipping breakfast, avoiding all the wonderful food that they sell at the airport. And once you get to your destination, you've now arrived in Rome, Italy, and you sit down and it's lunchtime when you get there, or it's dinner time. You wait until the first meal of the day at the new time, and when you eat that meal, it will more quickly reset your circadian rhythm, because when your body's in a fasting state, it doesn't make a lot of sense for you to feel that sleepy. So what will happen is you'll suspend your circadian rhythm, and that fasting will help. So I would say that those things would be the best thing for you to do.
Well, let me follow with a couple quick questions similar to this, and then we have a caller on the line. David from Lynchburg wants to know about sleep deficit. Can you bank your lack of sleep and then catch up on the weekend?
For short periods of time, you probably can, but I will say that this is a very debated topic, and I'm pretty much resolved to the fact that all the sleep that I lost in my medical training, I will never get back. But for day-to-day types of sleep losses, if you have a difficult night tonight, you probably can make up for it the next day. But, you know, making sure that your sleep is relatively consistent is probably as important too. So small debts, yes, you probably can make up. If we're talking about debt from 1988, probably not.
And then the last one on this topic is regularly awakening just before the alarm. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's probably a good thing. Again, it's an indication that your body is on a certain rhythm. And I find that when I'm in a good place and a good rhythm with my own sleep, that I'm often sort of awakening a little bit before the alarm goes off. And even if I'm in a place where I'm getting up really early to exercise, I don't like to get up early. I'm definitely a night owl, but I would often find that I would sort of awaken before my alarm, even on days that I shouldn't. That I would probably want to sleep in a little bit. So it's probably a very good thing.
We are talking about sleep and sleep disorders. Our guest today, Dr. Chris Winter, from Martha Jefferson Hospital's Sleep Medicine Center. Let me take a moment and thank Ben Around Tattoos in Charlottesville and downtown Waynesboro for supporting us today. They feature male and female tattoo artists. Ben Around Tattoos, thousands of designs available, and can create a design from work that you provide. Piercing also available. Ben Around Tattoos in downtown Waynesboro in Charlottesville at 701 West Main Street. Online, it's benaroundtattoos.com. All right, let's see. Dr. Winter, we have Cindy from Coesville. Hey, Cindy.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I was diagnosed with asthma, a couple decades ago, and it seems like my attacks are generally at night, and I wake up gasping for breath, and I do my albuterol so many times. But I'm wondering, perhaps it could be sleep apnea?
Perhaps. I mean, I think that it could. Waking up, feeling like you're short of breath, feeling like you were gasping right before you woke up, all of these are sort of classic signs of sleep apnea. A lot of people really feel a sense of panic when they can't breathe. And I have patients say they have to jump out of bed and stick their head out the window and get some cool air on their face, etc. So right. It could be, but there are certain variants of asthma that can be worse at night. I'm not a pulmonologist. I'm a neurologist. There are plenty of great pulmonary sleep doctors here in town that may be able to better address this. But But certainly, if you're there are, you know, aspects of asthma that can be worse at night. But I think that a lot of people come in thinking that the gasping that they're having is related to something other than sleep apnea, and I think that it very well could be.
So you would suggest a pulmonologist then?
I think if you've got significant asthma, I think seeing a pulmonologist, I mean, Will Hammond at Martha Jefferson's fantastic. He's a sleep doctor and an individual who sort of specializes in asthma and pulmonary disorders. I think that somebody like that would be able to address both of your concerns probably better than I could.
Okay, Dr. Ham, you said?
Hammond,
okay, great.
All right.
Okay,
thanks, Cindy.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget, you can listen to this program online. It will be podcast, CVillePodcast.com. A few moments left with Dr. Chris Winter, our sleep doc. Chris, something that somebody else brought up led me to this. Is it possible to have too much sleep?
Yes.
You can have too little.
Yes, you can. And we were sometimes referred to that as sleep drunkenness. And, you know, that's the college student that says, you know, Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays, I sleep in until noon. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I've got an 8 o'clock lab. And on Fridays and Saturdays, I don't get up until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, these individuals, you can often get to a place where they don't feel like any amounts of sleep ever make them feel particularly awakened because their body's rhythm is so off. So, yes, and if an individual comes to me and says, hey, you know, Chris, I really think that I'm somebody who needs 10 hours of sleep or 11 hours of sleep a night to be my best, my first thought is that the high quantity of sleep is probably making up for a poor quality of sleep. So if you're somebody who feels like you need excessive amounts of sleep to get through your day, the first thing I would think to myself is, gee, could there be something wrong with my sleep, and I'm compensating for it by trying to get more of it. So, yes, you can absolutely sleep too much.
You mentioned sports several times here, and my understanding is that you were the sleep doc to the World Series baseball champion San Francisco Giants.
I was. I've worked with the many professional teams, and one of them being the San Francisco Giants. We've worked with them for about 2.5 years. Ben Potenzianzo is one of their strength and athletic conditioners, and he and I have done a lot of projects together looking at our newest project is looking at players and sort of classifying them through surveys as being either night owls or morning birds, or people who do really well in the morning, and trying to see if their performance in games matches up with the way they perceive themselves in terms of their chronotype. And lo and behold, we certainly see that. So it's a really kind of exciting new thing to keep track of with these players. So we're having a lot of fun with that.
Did you get a ring?
Everybody asked me that. I got a lot of really nice items from them, but I don't think a ring is in my future. If I'm getting a ring, there's probably a lot of people who deal with the Giants who are getting rings. So we'll see. I'll let you know if I get a ring.
I see the phone lines ringing. We probably have time for that last phone call. We are talking with Dr. Chris Winter on sleep and sleep disorders, medical director of Martha Jefferson Hospital's Sleep Medicine Center. Restless leg syndrome. When I see that advertisement on TV, I always think, oh my gosh, there's something else they're trying to sell medicine about.
Yeah, a lot of people think that. Restless leg syndrome has been around since antiquity. We've not done much with it because we've never had really great treatments for it. But it's a very real condition. It's a very difficult condition to describe. But I assure you, there's some listeners out there who have it, this uncomfortable sensation in their legs. It makes it difficult for them to sit still in the evening. And as silly as it sounds, it's a really difficult condition to have because it's very disruptive in terms of your ability to get to sleep and stay asleep. And I would just say that don't buy into the fact that it's just a drug company created condition. If you have it, seek treatment for it. It'll be the best thing you've ever done. It can really affect the quality of your sleep in a positive way. We had a football player from Virginia Tech who had such bad restless leg syndrome that he was actually wearing little holes in his sheets because his legs would kick all night long. So nobody knew anything about it. They just knew he couldn't stay awake to watch films during practice or after practice. So it's real, and it affects a lot of people.
This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Our last 90 seconds or so with Dr. Chris Winter talking about sleep and sleep disorders. Sean, are you bringing me a handwritten anonymous question? Actually, do you want to just read it out?
Yeah, we had an anonymous caller who called in, doctor, and said that she has all the symptoms she's heard. Symptoms she's heard other people talk about: her teeth grinding, her back is sore, her mouth is dry.
Yeah.
And but she's not quite ready to go see a doctor yet, and wants to know if there's any a good way to self-diagnose her problems.
What I would recommend is maybe a tape recorder and a video camera. I mean, I have a very cheap video camera that's got an infrared feature, so you can set the little video camera up there and film yourself sleeping and listen for pauses in your breathing. Do you see yourself actually waking up? It's amazing how many times people can wake up who have sleep apnea and have no recollection of doing it. So that's probably where I would start. I mean, a lot of patients come in and they bring their grandson's tape recorder, and the grandson snuck it into the grandparents' room and tape recorded the snoring and thought it was really funny. But that can be a good first step in terms of diagnosis. And don't fear sleep doctors. We're pretty harmless. We don't give out shots, so.
And you get a free night's sleep, right?
And you get a better night's sleep. We work really hard to make sure that you're getting a better night's sleep.
All right. Chris, thank you so much. Sounds like a lot of people listening out there today.
Oh, hello to Maeve and Cam, too. I mentioned my son. I didn't mention my other two kids.
Where, real quick, Martha Jefferson Hospital Sleep Clinic.
Medicine Center. The Sleep Medicine Center, yep.
Find it in the business page.
Find it on the business page. You can look it up online, www.mjhsleep.com or .org. I'm not sure. One of those two, but it's on there.
My guess is Sean will put that as a link on the podcast. So check out the podcast on SeavillePodcast.com. Next Sunday, Santa will be here making phone calls. If your child is deserving of a phone call from Santa, abstractme@AOL.com. Drew Thompson up next with Les Thims Purdue. Thank you.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The wake-up call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.